Imagine for a moment that your dad's already passed away, and now your mom passed away. And she had a really nice wedding ring that your dad gave to her over 50 years ago with a big diamond, beautiful. And now it's up to you and your siblings to decide what are you supposed to do with that ring. Your brother is sentimental, and he's like, you know what? Dad gave it to mom over 50 years ago. It belongs with mom. We should bury her with it. Your sister thinks that ring is absolutely beautiful. And she's like, but I want it for myself. And you also know, well, you're going to be selling the house and selling the cars. And if you sold the ring and split that three ways, there'd be a lot of money and a lot of value in that ring. I mean, you could give a lot to charity. You could pay off that debt. Do you know, like, what you'd be doing with that ring if you were in that situation? Some of you? It's a tricky situation. Some people are sentimental. They're romantics. They're like, it's got to go with mom. Others are like, but why would we waste the value of the ring by burying it 6 feet underground? A wise woman once told me, when it comes to money, people are funny. I've seen this. I literally heard a story within 24 hours of their mom dying. Two brothers were literally wrestling on the kitchen floor over inheritance. People get crazy about this. But we even see this in our story from the Bible this morning, where there's something that's incredibly valuable, and some people say it should be used for that, and others say, but it's worth so much money, it could be sold, and think of what the money could be used for. This morning, we're continuing our series. We're calling Countdown to Calvary, a walk through Holy Week, where we're literally going day by day through Jesus' last week before being crucified on the cross on Good Friday. Today, what we're talking about is what happened on Wednesday of that week, the day that Judas agreed to betray Jesus. So if you want to open your Bibles to Mark chapter 14, we're going to be looking at a long, lengthy passage from Mark chapter 14 today, as we've been keeping Mark as kind of our primary text in going through this entire week. Let me read to you from Mark chapter 14, verse 1. It says, now the Passover and the festival of unleavened bread were only 2 days away, and the chief priests, so that was on Friday, 2 days away, that's how we know we're on Wednesday here. The chief priests and the teachers of the law were scheming to arrest Jesus secretly and kill him, but not during the festival, they said, or the people may riot. While he was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. Some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages and the money given to the poor. And they rebuked her harshly. Leave her alone, said Jesus. Why are you bothering her? She's done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want, but you will not always have me. She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. Then Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went to the chief priests to betray Jesus to them. They were delighted to hear this and promised to give him money. So he watched for an opportunity to hand him over. So Wednesday of Holy Week is the day that Judas essentially decided how he wanted hypothetical ring to be handled. Or he was so upset that this perfume, this hugely valuable alabaster jar of perfume, was wasted. And he was frustrated. And so he went to the chief priests to betray Jesus. And so today, we're going to focus our attention on Judas Iscariot. Who he was, why he did what he did, how it affected him, and then compare that to another disciple who also betrayed Jesus that very same night that Judas did. Often when I've read this story, I have thought to myself and wondered, why did Judas have to be involved in this story at all? Like, you have this signal that he makes with the chief priest that the man I kiss is the one you are to arrest. And I always thought, is that why they needed Judas? But they all knew who Jesus was. It wasn't that they had a problem with identifying who Jesus was. No, the problem was, I think the key here to understanding the problem is in verse 11, where it said, so he watched for an opportunity to hand him over. In Luke's account, it has that same sentence, but it adds the phrase, when no crowd was present. As you've seen in all these passages we've been talking about throughout this week, and even the beginning of this passage, the problem that the chief priests and the Pharisees and the elders always had was that the people were so delighted by Jesus. And so while they were furious with him, they knew that they were going to cause a riot if they arrested Jesus in the middle of the crowds. So they needed to figure out how they could get to Jesus when there were no crowds around. And that's where Judas fits in perfectly. Judas knew Jesus' regular patterns. Judas knew that Jesus went and prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane alone to be with his Father frequently in the evening. And so, why was Judas needed in this story? For the chief priest's sake, it was to arrest Jesus away from the crowds in the middle of the night when they weren't going to cause an uproar. From Jesus' perspective, though, it was to fulfill prophecy. Just like so many prophecies that have already been fulfilled as we've followed through this Holy Week of Jesus, and even more that are fulfilled on Good Friday. Psalm 41, verse 9 says this, even my close friend, someone I trusted, one who shared my bread, we're going to see the passage that points to that later, has turned against me. There's prophecies all through the Old Testament, hundreds of years before Jesus ever walked the earth. All these things were written down. And so Jesus needed one of his 12 to betray him to fulfill the prophecy. Not that Jesus did something to make Judas do it, but Jesus always knew this is how it had to happen. So according to what we read in Mark's gospel, we don't really see a clear motivation for the betrayal other than that Judas went to the chief priests immediately after the woman anointed Jesus' head with the expensive perfume. And we know that Mark never does anything on accident, so he links these two accounts directly together. But if we look at the Gospel of John, John makes this connection much more explicit. So if you want to turn two books over to John chapter 12, we're going to read from John chapter 12, verses 1 through 6. And we're going to see how John tells this story a little bit differently. Where Mark said it was 2 days before the Passover, John chapter 12, verse 1 says, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here, a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. And we hear that and we think back to the analogy of the introduction, and we understand some people just think differently about value and how things should be used. But Judas had a different motivation, and we pick that up in verse 6. He did not say this because he cared about the poor, because he was a thief. As the keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Judas wasn't saying, hey, let's use this really valuable thing to help the poor. He was saying, hey, let's use this really valuable thing to put more into my pockets for my personal gain. And so what we see first in this account, I do want to reconcile. John says it takes place 6 days before the Passover. Mark says it takes place 2 days before the Passover. What's going on here? In John, it actually is the night before Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem on the back of a donkey. But Mark places it on Wednesday, the same day that Judas went to the Pharisees and the chief priests to betray Jesus. And I think what we can understand here is Mark is purposely taking this story and moving it in time to put it right with Judas' betrayal, to say, this caused that. John, on the other hand, I believe, is putting this story where it belongs, before Jesus actually came into Jerusalem. But then John is being very explicit in saying, this is what caused Judas to become so angry, because Judas was a thief. So what we did see in Mark was Mark said some of those present who were indignant about the waste of perfume, but John just ties that together and says it's not just some who were indignant, it was Judas, and this is why. In verse 6, we saw who Judas' character really was. He was a greedy thief. While the rest of the disciples were learning from Jesus, were growing in their understanding of God, Judas was using his position for his own personal gain. And it's very easy to read these Old Testaments, or read these stories in the Bible, and to read about Judas, and to just say, he is one of the bad guys in the Bible. He's one of the villains. And we just lump him with the chief priests of the New Testament of Jesus' time. And we lump him with the brutish kings of the Old Testament who turned their backs on God. And we just say, those are the bad guys of the Bible. But the truth is, we're all a lot like Judas. In various ways, we all find ways and slip into ways that we betray Jesus. The first way many of us likely betray Jesus is using Jesus for our own goals. It happens. People have kids. They want their kids to have morals, so they bring their kids to church, hoping that somehow the kids learn a little bit about Jesus and are better behaved because of it. Sometimes I think those parents aren't actually really looking for their own relationship with Jesus. They're looking for Jesus to just help their kids be better kids. Some people come to church and they don't really follow Jesus, but they just like to know that they can pray and hope that Jesus gives them everything that they want. That Jesus, just take care of this for me and take care of that for me and heal this and heal that. They don't actually have relationship. They just see Jesus as like a genie lamp. You just rub it, and then Jesus gives you the things that you're looking for. Or maybe some people who put money in the offering plate, and they just quote that verse, Luke 6:38, that says, give and it will be given to you, a good measure pressed down, shaken together and running over. And they think, Jesus, I'm going to give to you, and you make sure you give back to me. There's all these little twists on faith and relationship with Jesus that people fall into these traps, and they're not really following Jesus. They're following or hoping for the blessings associated with Jesus more than the relationship with the man himself. The way that you know you fall into this trap is if you take away your kids, take away your health, take away your finances, are you still following Jesus? Or are you only willing to go to church and say you're a Christian when things are good, and when things get hard, you walk away because Jesus isn't giving you what you hope to get from him? That's a betrayal of Jesus. It's exactly what Judas did himself. He followed Jesus because he was profiting financially the entire time he was the treasurer. Second way that we're like Judas is exchanging loyalty to Jesus for your own personal gain. Judas wanted 30 pieces of silver more than relationship. But what have you wanted more than connection with Jesus? What have you been willing to set aside, or been willing to set aside your relationship with Jesus in order for you to gain? Sometimes you take that career advancement, or you enlarge the farm, knowing that now you're going to work 7 days a week and you're going to have no time whatsoever to engage with the church or reading the Bible or do anything to build your relationship with God. Others of you maybe have dated that really pretty girl or that really successful guy that you knew wasn't a Christian, but you were willing to kind of put your faith to the side because you wanted that person more. Sometimes we betray Jesus by shifting our loyalties and saying, but really, Jesus, I want this more than I want you. Finally, we can betray Jesus and be a lot like Judas when we are with Jesus without any kind of transformation. For 3 years, Judas walked with Jesus. He was literally in the dust of his rabbi right behind him as they traveled around the countryside. He heard all the teachings. He saw all the miracles. And while 11 of the disciples were completely and dramatically changed to the point of they pretty much all died as martyrs, Judas remained completely unchanged. There was no transformation in him. And I think that some people can go to church and they can attend Sunday school and they can memorize the Bible verses. But if you don't actually allow the relationship to transform your heart and your soul and your will, all you are is becoming very knowledgeable about the man. Judas knew all about what Jesus taught, but he was not allowing Jesus to transform his heart. Jesus Christ wants one thing from you. It's not that you have all the knowledge. He wants your heart and your will to be transformed to look more like him. And if you hang out with Jesus and you go to church so that you can feel good about yourself, but you're never allowing him to actually transform who you are, it is a betrayal of the Son of God and his desire for your life. Now here's a side note, here's a tangent I decided to add in. Did you guys notice in Mark, it says that the oil was poured on Jesus' head. And then in John, it says it was poured on Jesus' feet. And some people look at this and they say, that proves the Bible is unreliable. That's how you know that this book cannot be trusted. And when somebody ever says that to you, I want to give you this little tool to put in your toolbox, okay? If there is a car accident and multiple people see it, everybody perceives their reality slightly differently and from their own perspectives, okay? So one person who's totally into cars is going to be like, I know it was a Nissan Maxima, probably a 2003. Somebody else has no idea. They're like, it was red. And it's probably burgundy, but that's just what they call it. They say it's red, even though it's burgundy. One other person is going to remember the noon whistle went off like just a moment before the accident to kind of place the time and everything. That's just what happens when police officers go to a car accident. They know that they're going to get different stories from different people. And it's not because these people are trying to lie to them. It's just how everybody perceives the situation. And even though some of the facts might be contradictory, it doesn't mean that the event didn't happen. If, in fact, two people tell the exact same story, it's probably because both of them are lying. If me and my brother both come home and tell my mom exactly where we were and how the entire night unfolded, it's probably because we sat together and made sure we got our stories straight. That's not normal, to have the stories be a perfect match. What I find interesting, John focuses on the perfume being poured out on Jesus' feet. In the very next chapter, what is Jesus doing with his disciples' feet? He's washing them. So John's focusing on the feet. Mark is focusing on what makes more sense, is that she poured the oil on his head. In Mark's account, Jesus says, she anointed my body. So I think that leaves room. She anointed his head, his body, and his feet. And each gospel writer includes the piece that fits their story best. Okay, so when somebody comes to you and is like, these two things don't match, say, I know. And it's actually better that way. It proves that all the disciples didn't get together and fabricate one single story, but they told it how they saw it, and that's why it can be trusted. So now we've looked at what went on in Judah's heart when he decided to arrange to betray Jesus on Wednesday. Now let's look ahead and see how this story all turns out. In John chapter 13, verse 21, we read this. It's the Last Supper. They're all in the upper room together. After Jesus had said this, Jesus was troubled in spirit and testified, "Very truly I tell you, one of you is going to betray me." His disciples stared at one another at a loss to know which of them he meant. One of them, the disciple whom Jesus loved, was reclining next to him. Simon Peter motioned to this disciple and said, "Ask him which one he means." Leaning back against Jesus, he said to him, "Lord, who is it?" Jesus answered, "It is the one to whom I will give this piece of bread when I have dipped it in the dish." Then, dipping the piece of bread, he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. As soon as Jesus took the bread, Satan entered into him. Just like we saw last week, when Jesus told the chief priests that he knew what they were planning to do, Jesus essentially tells Judas he knows what Judas is planning to do. And if, I don't know about you, if I have a plan that is top secret and it's meant to surprise somebody, but then that person comes in and says, "I know all about your secret," I'm probably not going to follow through on my top secret mission. If I'm like, "Hey, I've got this surprise birthday for Michelle and all this stuff," and she's like, "Yeah, I know why you want to do this. All this is arranged." I'd be like, "Okay, I need to change my plan now." But Judas didn't do that. He went forward with this plan, even though Jesus made it very clear he knew what was about to happen. Why? I think it's the bolded text on the screens. Satan entered into him. That is a sobering phrase, is it not? In verse 2 of John 13, so just a few verses before that, it did say, and we didn't put it on the screens, but it said, the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. So earlier in the chapter, the devil had prompted Judas. Now, here in verse 27, Satan has entered into him. We have to understand, especially in this moment, what is going on in Jesus' world is a massive cosmic battle between God and Satan. Satan is very active in this moment. Satan wants to snuff out the light of the world before he can do anything to dramatically change it for all of us. That's why Satan wants Jesus dead. That's why Satan works through Judas. And I understand this language can be scary for us. We might be asking ourselves, can Satan enter into our own lives? And I think we have to understand this is a bit of a special situation here. Because of this cosmic battle, Satan was working very specifically in this moment. But let's not take Judas off the hook. Judas allowed it. Judas was the one who walked with Jesus but was unchanged. His heart was after the money, not after the Son of God. So when Jesus was at the center of wasting this valuable perfume, all this money, Judas' money, in his mind, Judas was angry, and he was fully opposed to Jesus. And I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Judas had made himself the enemy of Jesus. Satan, clearly the enemy of Jesus. Judas had aligned himself with the devil. It did not make it that hard for the devil to then enter into him. So what does this mean for us today? I know that the power of Jesus inside me is greater than the power of any darkness. If you have the Holy Spirit inside of you, you don't need to fear that somehow a demon or the power of Satan is going to come over you and control your will the way that I believe we see in this passage. However, Judas clearly was not a follower of Jesus. He was acting in evil, deceitful ways, fully aligned with Satan himself. Can that happen today still? I believe it can. Is it common? Probably not. What's the absolute remedy? Fill yourself with the power of Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit inside of you. Make a decision to walk with Jesus, not away from him. And then you don't have to worry about these things because they can't happen to you. The power of Jesus is greater than the power of anything Satan can throw at you. So, as the story continues, what we learn a little later is that Judas is, when it all unfolds, he's filled with remorse. But he turns his remorse into destruction rather than redemption. This is the end of Judas' story. Matthew chapter 27, verses 1 through 5. Early in the morning, all the chief priests and the elders of the temple made their plans how to have Jesus executed. So they bound him, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate, the governor. When Judas, who had betrayed him, saw that Jesus was condemned, he was seized with remorse and turned the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests, or returned the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and the elders. I have sinned, he said, for I have betrayed innocent blood. What is that to us? They replied. That's your responsibility. So Judas threw the money into the temple and left. Then he went away and hanged himself. Sadly, the end of Judas' story is one of regret and death. Him and Jesus. But that's not saying anything surprising. We should all understand betrayal leads to death. Death of a family relationship when you betray somebody within your family. Maybe a friendship when you cut somebody in the back. Even the death of a marriage when you betray your sacred vows. Betrayal always leads to death. There's a reason God desires his people to be faithful, even in hard times. So now, before we end today, I want to tell you the story of another disciple who betrayed Jesus that same night. It's a story that you're probably familiar with. At the Last Supper, Jesus told Peter, the leader of the 12, that he was going to deny Jesus three times that evening before the rooster crowed to signal the dawn of the next day. And Peter was adamant that would absolutely never, ever happen. But as we read the story of Jesus' last 24 hours, we see that Peter did, in fact, betray Jesus and deny knowing him three times. And just like Jesus predicted, immediately after Peter denied him the third time, the rooster crowed. And like Judas, Peter was filled with remorse. Matthew says that Peter went outside and wept bitterly. But Peter didn't give up. He longs to see Jesus. So when the women come back from the tomb and say, the stone is rolled away and Jesus is gone, Peter takes off running. He wants to see Jesus. Later, while he and the disciples are on a boat fishing, they see Jesus on the shore cooking fish. Peter doesn't wait for the boat to get to shore. He says he actually jumped out of the boat and ran to see Jesus. Peter isn't running from Jesus. He is running to Jesus. He does not give up. So in this moment where Peter's jumped out of the boat and run through the water to get to Jesus, rather than this betrayal leading to death, we see Jesus using this as an opportunity to reconcile his relationship with Peter. Three times, Jesus essentially asked Peter, "Do you love me?" And Jesus ends by saying, "Then follow me." And with that, Peter's life in following Jesus isn't over. But he actually goes on to be one of the lead apostles, the leaders of the church in Jerusalem, and spreading the gospel of Jesus all across the Jewish nation. None of us want to be like Judas, recorded for all of history as the one who betrayed Jesus. But subtly, we all sometimes fail Jesus in ways in which we are ashamed. Even Peter, the leader of the 12 disciples who said, "I will never deny you," betrayed Jesus himself. But these two disciples responded in very different ways. We have two betrayals and two very different responses. Judas was filled with destructive despair. Peter longed to be reunited with his Savior. Judas gave up. Peter held out hope. Judas was never redeemed. Peter went on to do great things for God. Two betrayers, two very different outcomes. That's the challenge for us today. You may fall short and betray Jesus. I know I do more often than I care to count. But we have a decision to make. In that moment of our sin and our shame and our despair, will you respond like Judas or like Peter? Will you tuck your tail between your legs and walk away from Jesus, feeling defeated, like you can't ever measure up, you're not good enough? Or will you jump out of the boat and run to him? Will you stop going to church, stop reading the Bible, and stop believing because you feel like such a failure? Essentially giving up your entire spiritual life? Or will you lean in, turn to Jesus, ask for forgiveness, double down, and say, "God, I know that I'm a mess, but this whole church history is filled with men and women who are a mess, who have betrayed Jesus, and all of them have received God's grace and God's forgiveness, so long as you make the choice to lean in." Judas wasn't an obvious monster. He looked like a disciple until he didn't. And the uncomfortable truth is, so did every one of the disciples at the table. That's why they asked themselves, "Is it I, Lord?" The question isn't whether you're capable of what Judas did. You are, and so am I. The question is what you do when you find out. Do you run to him or do you run from him? That's the only choice that matters. Would you bow your heads with me as we pray?